What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of An Investor's Journey. Once a week, we were trying to do the what we decided to call An Investor's Week, which is at the end of every week. Last week, we were very busy and got a little sick over the weekend, so I wasn't able to put it out. So I'll be looking out for that one at the end of this week. I'm going to sum up last week and this week. There's been a lot going on, so look out for that one. Now, on this episode, I wanted to talk about how to run and determine an ARV when you're doing comps and looking to either wholesale a house or buy a house for yourself. So let's get into it. Biggest thing you need to keep in mind is that you will need MLS access. MLS access is something that real estate agents have access to. The reason you need this is because you need to find sold properties when you're determining a comp, right? So you need houses that have recently sold. And in a lot of states, this is not public information. The only people that have this information is the MLS. It's the only way that you're going to be able to find these comps. So you got to make sure to have MLS access. Now, what I did when I first started off, I'm still not an agent, but I've partnered with an agent. I've always partnered with agents because, again, the most accurate comps you're ever going to get are coming from the MLS. Do not use Zillow as a determinant for value, right? A lot of people say, well, Zestimate says it's worth this. That means absolutely nothing. Zillow can very well be 20 grand over or 20 grand under, and they're both equally possible. So not a good estimate. The other place that's not good to determine comps is the appraisal district. Usually homeowners are the ones that do this a lot because, of course, I mean, they don't really know better. They feel like it's appraised. They look at it as an appraisal. But it's a tax appraisal. It's not an actual appraisal of your home. So they look, they get their yearly invoice from the county and it says your tax appraisal is this. So they think that's what their home is worth. And that's very far from the truth. I mean, that number can always be disputed. We do that a lot. We dispute all our numbers on all the properties we own because, I mean, they're always way off. I mean, the way they determine this value is they just look at the whole neighborhood, look at your square footage, kind of look at I think it's a Google Earth view of your home or something to see if you've done anything funky to it. And they pretty much just guesstimate and come close to, they average it out and say, hey, this is what you owe. But they don't know what the inside of your house looks like. They don't know if you've done any upgrades or if your house is deteriorating, tremendously. They don't know all this. So you want to make sure, that's another place that's not, it's a little more accurate than Zillow, but not by much. I mean, and you also have areas that you might come in well under. I mean, we have pockets here in San Antonio where these areas are appreciating greatly. And if you look at the tax appraisal, they haven't, they take some time to update and they're still probably saying $80,000 tax appraised value. But when you're running the comps, you're looking at that house might sell for 190 or 200, right? So you want to make sure that, again, the most accurate way is to have access to the MLS and to do it that way. Let's proceed assuming that you have access to the MLS. Now, the most important information that you need in order to start running an ARV is, and by the way, just to be clear, ARV is after repaired value. So this means what is the house going to be worth once all the updates and necessary repairs have been made to the house? This is typically what you're looking for is what is the prettiest, nicest house on that neighborhood sold for, and what do you need to do to make your house look like that to get the most value, right? So that is after repaired value. And you're going to hear this a lot if you haven't already in the real estate space, what ARV is. It's after repair value. I recently spoke to somebody where she's obviously seems to be new. I don't know where she got this interpretation from, but she was saying, hey, I'm looking to determine the ARV on one of the properties. She says, do I take the bottom three solds, average that out, and get my ARV? And I was like, no, the bottom three solds are the complete opposite. You know, you want, if anything, take the top three solds, but you shouldn't do that either. I mean, you should really run an ARV on this, you know, really do the research. But for some reason, she thought it was the bottom three sold. I think she was more targeting fair market value, which fair market value is pretty much what is your house worth in its current condition on the open market, right? What, if you were to put it on the market right now, as it sits, what is its value? And I think that's where she might have been confused with. But just to be clear, ARV is after repair value. Whenever an investor asks you what the ARV is and stuff like that, they want to know once they fix it up, once it's like, what compared to the prettiest house on the block, what is that value going to be? All right. So in order to determine that for your subject property, you're going to need to know how many bedrooms it has, how many bathrooms, what's the square footage, what's the year built, and also the subdivision. These are all very important things that you need to know when you start comparing it to other properties. Now, here's one thing to keep in mind. When you're running comps, you want to compare similar year builds, same bedrooms, and maybe the same amount of bathrooms. That the bedrooms are the biggest things, bathrooms are the second biggest, right? So they're not a huge priority, and this is something that you will determine as you run the comps. As you run comps, you're going to see, does an extra bathroom really add that much more value? Right now, it will add value. It will be, and this may not be appraised value. It might be more intrinsic value to the homeowner, but there is something to be said about a house that is a 3-1 compared to a house that's a 3-2, right? Two bathrooms is always better than one, and they sell a lot quicker. Now, I have ran comps where I see 3-2s selling for the same price as 3-1s. But what I'm looking at is also how fast are they selling, right? So while they may sell for the same price, you will have a much better chance of selling a 3-2 faster than you will a 3-1. But again, you got to look at that market. Now, not every market, we've run so many comps for so many houses, and I see this all, I've seen recently a house that was, 3 bedrooms. And then I see a lot of houses that are sold for 4 bedrooms. So I'm looking at them, and then I'm looking at 3 bedrooms and 4 bedrooms. They're pretty much going for the same price. There is no real added value to having a 4th bedroom. And that surprised me a little, but at the end of the day, I'm not here to, you know, pass judgment. It's just look at the facts. So when I'm looking at 3-bedroom houses selling for the same price and some were selling for more than the 4-bedroom houses, does an extra bedroom really matter at that point, right? So it might matter if you're not doing that nice of a rehab where the extra bedroom might pull you up a little bit, but you got to just really look at them apples to apples. And something like that, when we were looking at it and we were seeing that that extra bedroom was not bringing in any extra value and the level of rehabs were all relatively the same compared to what we were going to do to it. So we didn't really care all that much at that point. We knew that our 3-bedroom was going to comp to all the other properties in that neighborhood because that was just what they were selling for. It didn't matter whether they were 3 or they were 4. And that's just exactly what happened. We sold it, and we sold it higher than what the 4 bedrooms were selling for, and it didn't affect it. Didn't affect it at all. In other areas, it affects it a lot. An extra bedroom is an extra bedroom. You're going to see that price difference, and you're going to see that it might sell quicker because probably, you know, you have bigger families moving to those areas, whatever it may be. So again, this is why you need the MLS. You need to look at the data that it produces. Year built is also very important because that will determine sometimes construction style. So in San Antonio, a lot of houses built in the 70s come with aluminum wiring, Now, this becomes an issue is if you're trying to update some of the switches, some of the breakers, you got to keep in mind that aluminum and copper don't work well together. So there's things that you need to do to address those situations. So if you're getting a house from the 70s and maybe the electrical hasn't been updated, that's something that you want to keep in mind. As the same as you don't want to compare houses, like there's some neighborhoods that we have directly next to each other, houses from 78 and the other ones are houses from 85, and the price difference is 15-20 grand, right? And then you have other areas that you can have a 10-year difference and the price points don't change at all. So you want to pay attention to that. And where that varies a lot is in neighborhoods. So when usually when you have houses from the 70s and another area houses from the area 80s, you're going to see that they're two actual different subdivisions, especially like here in San Antonio, you have so many different subdivisions. So it can vary greatly. So you want to make sure that you're staying within the same subdivision. You're not crossing over. You're not crossing into other neighborhoods just because it makes your comps look better. And I've seen this way too many times where people are crossing highways, major roads, and it's okay to do so. If you have a unique kind of property that there aren't many comps for it, and this is more of a little advanced strategy, so you want to make sure that if this is the first time you're doing this, that you seek out some help for this. But there are times where we've come across properties that they're very uniquely built, very unique areas. They're not cookie cutter homes. And sometimes you got to go a little wider to try to find some comps because that's what appraisers are going to do. So, I mean, that's essentially how we run our comps. We try to look at it. How is an appraiser going to look at this property? Because that's what matters is they're the ones when you go turn around and sell it or even turn around to refinance it, they're going to send an appraiser to come out and appraise the property. And they're going to look exactly at that. They're going to look at, you know, the style of the house built and all of that. And if they don't find it in the immediate proximity, then they'll start going out, you know. And usually they go out. They don't go back. And what I mean by this is that they'll go a little further out from that neighborhood instead of going back in time, right? Where I believe they stay within 6 months. Then they'll probably go to 9 months, 12 months. The issue with going back in time is that as you're appreciating in an area like San Antonio is, if you're going back a year, houses weren't selling for that much, you know, perhaps in that neighborhood as they are right now, you know, compared to a year ago. So you don't want them going back. You know, that can really hurt you. And as it did for us, as you might have heard in one of our last podcasts that we did a while ago, is they ran comps for a duplex that we had in New Braunfels, and she didn't find properties. I mean, this lady should lose her license, but she decided to go back 3 years to find comps for this house. I mean, here in Texas, it's been appreciating tremendously in the past 5 years. So in especially a place like New Braunfels, in the last year alone, it's been appreciating like crazy. So if you're going back 3 years, I mean, you're just killing us on that one. And we were trying to sell this house for $250, and she comes back with her appraisal of $158. And when we looked at it, yeah, she went back 3 years. I mean, that's just... I mean, we vented already and I'm kind of venting again because it pissed me off so much. It caused so much headache. But yeah, it went back 3 years. But typically what we've spoken to appraisers and what they like to do is they rather go out than back, right? Because they want to look for comparable houses that are selling right now. So you want to do the same thing. And if you are pulling houses in your neighborhood and you run the comps and you're in a cookie cutter neighborhood and you pull comps within the last 6 months and there's like 12 houses and you can even at least get 3 houses that come to yours, stop looking for more, stop going out, because chances are the appraiser is going to look for that one. And if you're looking at those and the comps don't look very favorable, that's just what it is. They're going to use those. So don't try to cheat yourself to make the deal work, because you know, you're going to end up hurting yourself, or if you're wholesaling it, you're going to end up hurting the investor later on. Also about neighborhoods, another interesting little story that happened to us. We recently flipped a house. Now, this house was the same square footage in the same neighborhood, same year built as the other ones selling a little further north of this, in the same neighborhood, same exact neighborhood. Didn't cross any major streets. But when you drove the neighborhood, the ones selling a little further north, that side of that subdivision looked different. It looked a little cleaner. The houses were a little more spaced apart. You know, it just looked a little different. But it was the same year built. It was the same types of layouts. It was, you know, some of them, they were the same lot sizes. So, but when we started running our comps, we were clearly seeing a divide between where our house was and those houses in that, a little further north of us. And that divide was a $40,000 divide. Now, you might have ran comps in that neighborhood and just came up with that, you know, that ARV of saying 240, and you're like, yeah, same year built, you know, roughly the same lot size, same square footage, same beds and baths. I updated mine, looks awesome. Yeah, it's worth 240, but it really wasn't. Ours was worth, when we were looking at it, we're like, man, these don't sell for more than 200, you know, and we were looking at it, and it was crazy to us. So we drove the neighborhood again, and then we actually reached out to a real estate investor friend of ours. He's also an investor, but he's an agent, and he's been an agent in Texas for a very long time. This is what he does full time. He's really good at his job. So we approached him and we told him, we're like, hey, this is just really weird. We don't understand it. So he looked at it and he saw the same thing, and he's like, it's the look of the neighborhood. He says, just because it looks nicer, they're going to sell for more. And he says, an appraiser's not going to comp to those. I mean, that was just, it was shocking to us, right? Because when you look at it, apples to apples, it was the same freaking houses. But when you looked at it, like, you know, I actually saw the neighborhoods and drove through it. Yeah, you can tell that there was a difference. It was even like the sun was out more on the other side. I don't know if because it had less trees or what, but it was just weird. It looked much nicer. And even though our side did look nice as well, it wasn't going to comp. So we didn't even try to list for that high price. We listed at like 205, and that's what they came, and that's what it appraised for, and that's what it sold for. It didn't come in any higher, nothing, you know? So, I mean, that was very interesting. And that's why when you're comping out houses and you're doing all this, you want to pay attention to those details, because again, if you're a wholesaler, or even if you're keeping these and you're thinking it's worth 240 and it's really worth 200, I mean, that's a very, very big mistake to make. You understand? 40 grand. I mean, and if you bought the house thinking with that extra 40 grand, that could literally wipe you out. So keep that in mind. Look at the neighborhoods. Try to determine whether the beds and baths do make a difference, right? Also with the square footage. The square footage, another issue is people look at it. They look at houses saying, you know, all right, the house in this area, the max sold was 200 grand. Yeah, but it was maybe an 1,800 square foot house, right? And the one that I have is probably a 1,500 square foot house. So you're saying 200 grand. Well, no, it's not 200 grand. Right, that's a 300 square foot difference. That could be a whole extra bedroom. I mean, that makes a difference. Square footage makes a difference. So you can't comp that saying it's going to be roughly the same. And you also shouldn't take price per square footage the same. Bigger houses typically sell for less price per square foot than smaller houses. Right, so if you have a house that's selling for 150 and it's 1,500 square feet, and you get your price per square foot, you're not gonna automatically take that price per square foot and times it by 1,800 square feet that your other house is. You gotta adjust that price per square footage. Now, it's been said that it's usually $1 per 100 feet. You can try to implement that. it's been such a hit or miss when we've tried to use it, so I don't think it's a good way to do it. I think if you have something that broad of a difference, you know, 300-400 square feet difference, try to look for more similar homes. You know, if you have a 1800 square foot house and all the houses in the area have sold, there are 1500 and they sold for, let's say, 150, don't think that yours is going to sell for, you know, 200 just because it's, when you do the price per square footage. And I'm not doing the math, so don't quote me on that. I'm just giving you round numbers. Don't think it's going to sell for more just because the price, you times that price per square foot by the square footage. You know, it will sell for more, but it might not sell for substantially more because they don't have other houses that square footage to compare it to. And one of the biggest factors is that you don't know what kind of adjustments an appraiser is going to make. And that is, I swear, it's the biggest stress every time we renovate a house or do anything, because the appraiser, it's at the end of the day, it's their opinion. And they could be, it shouldn't be this way, but it is. We've seen it. They can literally wake up on the wrong side of the bed and all their appraisals look like shit that day. You know, and the worst part is that if you caught them on that day, that's it. That's what the banks are going to go with. You know, they're going to go with that appraisal. Now, you can dispute it and you can try to, you know, justify the comps that you pulled, the repairs that you've made and all of that. But at the end of the day, now they have to go order a new appraisal. I mean, it becomes quite of a process. And, you know, sometimes it's worth going through that process. Like for us, when it came back at 158 and we were targeting 250, we sure as hell fought that. And we ended up getting it, but it took over a month for, you know, the right appraisal to come in and everything for us to sell for that 250. So that really matters. And kind of talking about that, you want to also look on days on market, right? So you want to look at how fast are these properties selling? Because then you want to determine, this is going to help you on the sell side of it, is if they're taking 30 days, 40 days, this is all holding costs. This is going to cost money for it to sell. So you want to pay attention to, if it's selling for that much, for that amount of time, are there any little tweaks, any little things, features that you can add to your home to help it sell faster, right? One little thing that we do a lot is stage our houses. Every time we stage a house, it sells a lot quicker. We usually get it on the contract within the week. Again, it's not just the staging. It's also that we do our research. We make sure to buy the right homes. We do the right renovations, all of that. But a staged home does sell faster and sometimes for full price, because you also got to think about it from a homeowner's point of view. When they come into this home, they can feel like they're at home because there's couches, tables, bedrooms, you know, everything is set up so they don't have to imagine themselves there. They can already see how it will feel to live there. So these are all little things that when we're looking at days on market, what can we do to shorten the days on market? Because last thing you want to do is be sitting on the market for months. You know, that it just, especially in a hot market like we are in San Antonio, that looks bad. And usually when your house has been sitting on the market for months and nothing's been happening, even homeowners look at it like, what's wrong with this? You know, why is it not selling? What's the problem with this house? So stuff like that you want to be careful with. You want to pay attention to the days on market and all that stuff. Also, you want to pay attention to the sales terms. Sales terms is, are the houses in that area selling VA or FHA or conventional or cash? You want to pay attention to this, because if you, like, it happens to us a lot that we want to buy a house for a quick turnaround, but when we look at all the comps and we see that every house that sold FHA, there's a seasoning, right? So even though you're like, oh, this is a quick flip, yeah, but you can't accept the contract until day 91, I believe. So you got to hold the house for 90 days before you can accept the contract from an FHA buyer. So if you're buying in a neighborhood that you see they're all VA and FHA loans, don't rush the flip or keep that in mind. You know, either way, you want to make sure that you're not thinking that, oh, I'm going to flip it and in 3 weeks put it on the market, because you might get an offer right away. But if it's an FHA or VA, you can't accept it. Now you have a house that's renovated and it's fully updated, maybe staged, sitting vacant for the next 2 months until the 90 days comes due, and then you can actually accept an offer. So that you never want to do. What we do typically is we'll buy the house and we'll just sit on it. You know, when we know our renovations are going to be, let's say, this is for obviously a quick turnaround. If we know that our rehab is going to take about, you know, 3 weeks, like we have one right now that we're going to do this with, and we know the rehab is going to take about 3 weeks. So we're just pretty much going to sit on it for a while. We're going to sit on it for about a month, month and a half. Then we're going to, you know, probably get the roofer out there to do the roof and give it some time, and then get it. Because the other thing, the reason we're spacing it out a little bit is we don't want the house to look like a vacant home that nobody's ever going to. Because now you run the risk of vandalism and people breaking in, and that is a thing. And while there may not be nothing to steal, them just breaking a window to get in now costs you an extra $150, $200 to replace that window. So you don't want to add more expenses to the house. So you want to factor that in. If it's a VA, FHA neighborhood and it's going to be a quick rehab, you got to hold on to it. You got to hold on to it for at least the 90 days before you're able to accept the contract. So the sales terms becomes a real thing to keep in mind for holding costs and everything like that. Now, you have all this information, you looked at it. What are you looking at when you're running a comp besides the beds and baths and all that? What we typically look for is we want to see, do all the houses, let's say, have central AC and heat, right? There's times that we're buying houses that are under the $150,000 price point in San Antonio, and the ones that we're buying don't have AC or anything. They have window units. So when we run comps, I want to know, do the houses that have sold for the most money have central AC and heat? And if so, what they sold for? And also, what have the houses that only have window units sold for, if any? Because that's going to help me determine, do I want to add central AC or not? Right? There's areas that it just, you don't need to. The houses that are selling, they're selling with no AC or heat, you know, and that's just what that neighborhood does. So you don't, again, don't be emotional about this. Look at the facts. Look at the actual numbers. So we look at that. That's a big thing, because it's a easy thing to overlook when you're running comps, is that you just don't realize that it's missing an AC and all the other houses have AC units. So you want to factor that in, because that's going to be expensive. You got to get the units. You got to do the ductwork. You got to do all that. So it will cost money that you want to make sure you factor in. Another thing is new windows. Do the houses have new windows? That's also another expense that could be, you know, $5,000 to $7,000, if not more, depending on the size of the house. So if they all have new windows and your house doesn't, is that going to be much of a factor? We renovated a house also in a neighborhood that was about, this was a couple years ago, but it was a neighborhood that was a little over $220,000, and we chose not to update the windows. And there were some houses in the neighborhood that had some updated windows, some didn't. And the sellers that were coming in, they kept asking for concessions because they all wanted new windows. And again, this was actually going on like 4 years now. At the time, these were mistakes that we were making. We're like, oh, crap. So we had to actually lower our price, what it would cost to do new windows. And we obviously negotiated and compromised on a better price, but still, that needed to be done. And that could be a big holdup, because homeowners may be like, no, I want new windows, but I don't want to do it. I don't want to go through that hassle and mess. So I'm just not going to buy this house and then go to the next one. So you want to make sure, do they need new windows, or are the old windows fine? The same with doors. Do all the houses have brand new doors? Interior doors, I mean, like the six panel and stuff like that. That can or may not be an issue. You gotta, you know, kind of take a chance with it. What we usually do, there's some houses that we will do the doors, especially when we see a lot of doors are damaged and stuff like that, the frames are damaged. Then we just go ahead and just update all the doors. But if the majority of the doors are good and they just may be, you know, a simple flat door, what we try to do to kind of make it different is we will put like, they're almost like these black doorknobs. They're kind of look a little more rustic with the same color hinges. They're not black. I can't remember the color, but you're going to see them. I mean, you have like usually brushed nickel and then this one. And it's a little bit more expensive by like a dollar or so, but it's such a nice feature for some of these houses that people don't even realize the doors. And we've done this already on a couple higher end flips, and it works perfectly fine without having it replaced. We obviously paint the doors, door jams, everything, but we just change the hinges in the doorknob, and it makes the world of difference. But you want to make sure, you know, do you need new doors? Are they custom doors in these areas? Are you maybe in a historic areas where they have the older style doors? I mean, if you're working in a historic areas, you may not want to put a modern six panel door. It might just look stick out like a sore thumb, you know, it just looks really ugly. You might want to go with a different style of door, a little more older looking. So I believe like the one or two panel doors that you see a lot. You got to play around with that, and you got to look at the comps again to determine the types of doors. Cabinets. Do they have brand new cabinets, or are they refinished? One thing I never did when we had the construction company in New York, we never refinished cabinets. I never, never made sense for the labor, but here apparently they refinished cabinets a whole lot, and it's a new concept for us, but we've yet to do it. We haven't come across a house that the cabinets were that good that we can refinish them and just paint them. We've always had to replace them, but take a look at them. If they're all painted and yours can't be painted and they need to be replaced, now you have a little bit of a benefit because every house in that area has refinished cabinets, but you have brand new cabinets, right? So that can help. That can help on when you list it as putting brand new kitchen, brand new cabinets. That's definitely going to help. Do you get, you know, the new modern white shaker cabinets with the self-closing hinges, or do you get your basic Home Depot cabinets? I mean, these are all things that you want to look at very closely, because the kitchen, the bathroom, and the master bedroom is where a lot of value can be added. So you want to make sure to keep that in mind, as well as countertops. We always, always, always go for granite. You can tell me whatever you want about Formica countertops, cheaper, whatever. But granite, it is, we run the numbers, it's really not that much more expensive. And everybody loves granite. It just sells faster. So we always do that. Even if we're keeping the cabinets, that we've gotten a few houses where the cabinets are good, we don't have to do anything, we'll still rip out the countertops and put granite. It just makes that kitchen look brand new. So that's a good little thing to make sure you add. The flooring, tile, do you put, definitely always tile in the wet areas, which is the kitchens, laundry, bathrooms. Unless you have a small kitchen and you want to flow in like laminate or wood floors throughout the whole house. There's a lot of times in certain homes that carpeting in the bedrooms is enough. All the houses sell with carpeting in the bedrooms. And if that's the case, that's great for you because carpeting is cheaper. But you want to, again, look at the comps and try to see if carpeting, flooring, tile, what is needed in those floors to really get that value out of them. Also, you want to pay attention to a garage. A lot of houses have converted garage to add value. But you got to always keep in mind that garages also have their own value as well. Houses with no garage sometimes don't sell for as much as a house with a garage and with a two-car garage. So you want to keep that in mind. Does your house have a garage, and do all the houses selling have a garage? Because if they have a garage, that may affect your values a lot. So you want to keep in mind, you know, when you're looking at that, what is the issue that we can have? We had a house that had a kind of like a carport breezeway, and we closed it up and made it into a garage because it was going to bring in a lot more value if we did that than if we just left it open. So that, and also a pool. Pools sometimes add $10,000 to $15,000 in value. So if you're comping your house that doesn't have a pool to a house that does have a pool, keep that in mind. You might be taking a $10,000, $15,000 hit in the comps. You may not. You know, these are things that you got to look at. You know, is this one house with a pool and then all the other ones don't have a pool, but they all sold up for the same price, then a pool may not make that much of a difference. Usually, from what we've seen, it does. It always makes a difference. They always add about 10 to 15 grand. And again, that's just up to the appraiser. They're going to just, you know, whatever their opinion, feelings, whatever their urges are that day is what they're going to comp it to. So you want to make sure the pool, the garage. Oh, landscaping. Look at the landscaping. Is your, you know, does your house look like crap? Do you need to do even the fencing? Is the fencing broken? Is it leaning? Is it missing? Should you add privacy fence? All these things you want to make sure to look at in the comps. There's a lot of times that you get the one house that doesn't have any privacy fence and all the houses in the area do. This is something that you got to factor in, because then your buyers in those areas are expecting privacy fence. They want a privacy fence and that costs money. So you want to make sure to factor that in. If you need to do that, any landscaping, this is just always overlooked. Landscaping is always overlooked. And it's amazing. You got to think about curb appeal. You got to, I mean, when somebody just pulls up to the house, it's the first impression they get, right? You may have a killer kitchen inside, which I see this a lot when I'm looking at comps. They start the comps with the kitchen photo because that's where they spend all the money. And I quickly scroll because I want to see the front of the house, and you see the front of the house and it looks like shit, you know, and it's silly because it's something that's the first thing people are going to see when they pull up, and that's the first impression they get. So if they're pulling up and they're seeing a shitty front yard, you know, they're already walking in like, that wasn't the prettiest yard I've seen. So I'm not saying go anything fancy, but just keep that in mind. What we do is we do little borders around the front with like black mulch or something just to make it look cleaner, make it look nicer. You know, you might have to resod or just keep watering the lawn while you're renovating. Keep the landscaping in mind. And also when you're looking at it, to make sure that other comps, like, do they have manicured lawns? Do all the lawns kind of look about the same, or do they have, you know, new sod down, because that's what it's going to comp to. Keeping all that in mind, always look at all the solds. Never look at actives or pending. They don't matter. The only time I ever look at active properties, and I look at active option, back on market, I look at all these because what I want to look at is what is my competition look like, right? So now I look at solds for actual price point of what am I going to be selling this house for, but now I look at my actives to see what am I competing against. Are there houses that are on the market right now that are potentially renovated way better than mine will be, and maybe they're sitting on the market longer? This could tell you that maybe that market is starting to cool off a little bit, right? If you're looking at it and you see a lot of solds, and then you switch it over to see what's active option, and then you see a lot of properties active, that could be a bit of an issue for me, because now I'm seeing, man, there's a lot of competition in that area. Now I start looking at those, and are they updated? Are they real competition, or are they houses that people just putting on the market that look like crap? Because then I'm not too worried about it. Mine would be the nicest one. But if it's not, now I want to know, like, is this area slowing down? Right? Why are there so many houses coming up that they're not selling? This also helps to either be in an agent or having an agent as a partner. We go check out a lot of these houses that are active. Why are they not selling? What's going on? Let's look at the rehab. Because a lot of times on pictures, they always put the nicest pictures. And then you get there and you start seeing foundation cracks, and you see this and you see that, and you're like, okay, now I see why this is not selling. Right? So you want to do that research. You want to, you know, really lay eyes on your competition. So that's very important. That's something that not many people do. I strongly recommend it. Always look at your competition. Always look at what other people are doing and what's on the market, because it's going to help you a lot. Maybe you get ideas of like, wow, you know, they did this. That's actually really, really cool. I'm going to do the same thing. Or maybe you try to one up them by doing something a little different. You know, maybe you saved on one area, so you're going to spend on another that brings you more value. So that's what the actives, when the only time we use actives, but we never use actives for price points, because people can always list a property for whatever they want. It just does not mean they're going to sell. This is why you always want to look at solds. You want to look at what is actually selling and not what sellers are hopeful for. That just doesn't matter to me. I want to know what are buyers actually paying money for and what's appraising. That's why the sales terms are very important, because then you look in there and you see it's conventional or it's FHA or VA. That means that somebody came, appraised it, and it appraised for that price. So that means that it's going to keep appraising for that price. And the last thing is seller concessions. So again, VAs and FHAs tend to happen a lot more. Is they are typically buying houses that, you know, they pretty much can't afford. I mean, they have no money, and they're getting like, I don't know, 1% down, 2% down, whatever it may be. And they need seller concessions. They need closing costs, right? So a lot of times that's part of the negotiation, is seller concessions. So you want to look at, when you're looking at the comps, what are the typical seller concessions in that area? Is it $2,000, $3,000, $5,000? Because whatever it is, even though you say, oh, I'm not going to give it, you got to factor that in. A lot of times you got to give some seller concessions, because that's the kind of buyers you have in that area. So factor that in. That could even be factored in as kind of your price. You know, that you see that they're all selling for $200 with a $3,000 seller concession. So really the values are more like $197, right? So however you want to look at it, but factor that in. That's very important. So that's kind of like the quick and dirty of how we run our ARVs and everything. I'm going to do one. This one went a little longer than I thought. I'll do one shortly about running ARVs for rentals, because this is different. Running an ARV for a rental property that you want to either wholesale to a buy and hold buyer or even keep as a rental is different than running an ARV for a potential flip. So pay attention to that one. Hopefully I'll get that one out maybe next week. And also pay attention, by the end of this week, I'm going to have our Investors Week podcast number 2. And I'm going to go over everything that we've been working on and some of the problems and stuff that we've been having with some of our projects. So I hope you guys are enjoying this. Again, share this, rate us on iTunes or whatever podcast app you're listening to. Helps us. And thanks a lot for your support. And I'll catch you guys on the next one.